Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, happy Wednesday. Welcome to another episode of the Gear Garage Live Show where I answer questions. If you have a question for me, throw it in the comments. I'll get to it. If you're watching, if you're listening to this as a podcast, that sucks. I'm sorry. This is meant to be a live YouTube show. So either watch it live or watch it on YouTube. If you're just listening to it, I don't know. It's maybe interesting. I doubt it. It's probably completely pointless if you're listening to it, but I don't mind if you listen to it. I listen to podcasts like this all the time and get something out of it. So I guess I get it. Well, I want to start by talking about Clagfest and then answer some questions. We're going to do a commercial break in the questions because I have some stuff I want to promote. And then talk about some rope breaking. I've been breaking ropes today, and I've learned a lot by actually breaking them. And just want to share some thoughts, some quick thoughts I've had about some different ropes. So let's get on to talk about Clagfest. Now, for those of you that don't know, Clagfest is my favorite event of the year. There's all kinds of festivals and a lot of fun ones. It's not the hardest. It's like class 3+. Some people might call it 4 even. It's, you know, it depends on the flow. You know, it's not about how being gnarly. It's about community. There's amazing races. What I love about Clagfest is you don't have to just race. Like the wind, you just do it once. You race cataract or raft or whatever. You do it once, you're done. And we go have a party. Clagfest, there's like 12 different races. There's R2, R4. I like that they're doing R2 Pro and R2 like new person so that like it spreads the field a little bit. There's SUP race, kayak races, ducky race. When I say ducky, I mean inflatable kayak. There's pack raft race. There's oar boat and cataract. And so it's just a lot of different races. You can watch races. Also, a lot of vendors are there. You know, Air, Sotar, just the big companies are there. A few more. So I know Sawyer's going to be there. And they're bringing equipment you can demo. It's super easy also. The shuttle's short. You can usually get a ride with one of the vendors might drive you up there. It's just a great way to spend time with the community, do a race or not do a race, watch the races, do some boating, hang out with people, listen to live music. It is truly a festival. And this is its 40th year. I remember my first year going was its 25th year. I thought that was pretty cool. And I've tried to go pretty much every year. I've missed the last couple because I've had things come up at the last minute. But I fully expect to be there this year because I just love this festival. I love racing because it's fun. I'm a competitive person. But more than that, I love the community and all the people I get to see and the campfires and the music and all that stuff. So if you're looking for something to do, it's a busy weekend. It's, you know, middle of May. People are doing all kinds of cool stuff. But this is a worthwhile thing. And if you haven't been to the Clackamas River, it's super awesome. It's a great place. So I want to share a Clackfest. And I'll probably keep bringing it up because it's my favorite event of the year. Let's get on the questions. We got two questions today. The first one is, I have an Avon that I got from someone recently, but it doesn't have a serial number on it. It's a 14-foot gray self-baler with two removable thwarts and footholds on the floor for paddleboarding. My questions are, one, thoughts on the model. I'm thinking maybe an Adventurer, but not sure. Yeah, an Adventurer is a 14-foot raft. So the Pro is 16, the Super Pro is 18. And then there's some shorter ones like the Ranger and there's one more small that's 12-ish. And there's a 15 thing called the Expedition. But 14-foot gray sounds like Adventure. Two thwarts sounds like Adventure. Wait, two thwarts? Yeah. And two thwarts makes me think it's the darker gray, probably like, you know, late 80s or late 90s. Because they started putting three thwarts in them. I mean, sometime I think late 90s. Any idea when these are produced? So I have a general idea of boat's age. Boat came from the women's dad from the Kern. So I know it's probably at least 20 years old. I would need a photo to even take a guess. But if it's light gray, I think they started doing light gray maybe like mid-90s, and the darker gray was before that. But without a serial number, I can't tell you anything. Like the serial number has that year on it, everything. With a photo, I could take a wild guess. I love guessing. When I see an Avon, I try to guess the year because I've worked with Avons for a huge part of my guiding career. I love guessing the year. And so sometimes I'm within a couple of years, sometimes I'm off by 10 years. It would be a wild guess, but if it's dark gray, think 80s, late 90s, lighter gray, think late 90s to 2000s. And there can be Avons out there from the 80s that you wouldn't even know. The material was amazing. It can last a long time, so it could be super old. If it's a Self Baylor, I'm thinking probably at least mid 80s. And then can the footholds be removed somehow? Yeah, I mean, you should. Usually they're just glued to the floor. And so if you're thinking of the foot cups is what you're asking about, usually they're just glued to the floor. You can take it to a repair place and say, just remove these. To remove them, I just peel them up before. Like when they're that old, you can just like grab, put a pair of channel locks on them and pull, and they might come off. Toluene is the solvent for that glue. And so if you had some toluene in there, it might help get it undone. But it's just nasty stuff. You don't want to touch or breathe toluene. And so you don't want to mask up, have heavy-duty gloves if you work with toluene. But you can't. I've removed footholds before. Not on purpose, just because like they came unglued and they're half unglued, so I just ripped them out. Boom. All right, let's take a quick commercial break because I do want to talk about something that I'm bringing up right now. That I'm doing. I brought this up last episode, but I'm going to bring it up again. We have an online rowing course. I'm super proud of it. And we've been doing a lot of rescue training this spring. And I have been meaning to beef up this Foundations of Whitewater Rescue online course. And this is no substitute for hands-on learning, for sure. But there's a lot of people who don't have the time to do hands-on learning. They want the information. Maybe they get the information and practice with their friends. I don't know. But I'm going to start putting some time into this. And I'm doing some rope testing. I'll talk about that at the end of the show. Right behind me for the show, I've been breaking ropes all day. You can see all these ropes. I'll bring this up at the end of the show. Specifically, I'm going to redo the throwback section and add some more information on rope strength. And so I think this is it's been $25 for the past 5 years. It's been basically what I did was I took the classes out of our rowing school that were rescue and safety related and threw them in just this simple thing. And there's a lot there, but I'm going to start adding a lot more. And for those of you that watch the show, it's $25. I'm going to raise it increments of 10 as I do more things. So probably next week when I add a bunch of stuff to it, I'm going to make it 35. And then after, you know, eventually my goal is to have it complete and have it be $95. If you buy now, you get it for $25. Even the stuff I add later, you get it all. So when I add content, you get that in the new content. So just want to give you a heads up. This is something I'm going to start putting a lot of energy into. And if you want to get it, it's at whitewatereducation.com for $25. All right. End of commercial. Moving on to the next question. How do I do that? Add to stage. There we go. Okay. Illinois River low water. I see the Northwest Drafting Company has Illinois trips planned for the beginning of May. As of today, April 24th. Today's the 29th. So as of the time I got the message, 24th. Flows are forecast at around 300 CFS. Would you actually be taking your 16-foot gear rafts on these trips, or do you just cancel the trip if the flow doesn't come up closer to 500 CFS? Asking this as a private rafter with a lot of low water experience who wants to get on the Ilia low flows in the future. So it's really complicated to answer this. We've already canceled our first three trips. I'm holding on for the fourth, hoping the fourth goes. The first trip almost went, and it came down to like my general cutoff is 650, but it's a really complicated thing. Is it 650 and dropping more, or is it 650 and there's some rain coming to raise it up? Is it snowmelt 650 or rain 650? Because rain 650 is actually higher because the creeks are higher. The gauge is upstream quite a ways. There's a bunch of creeks that come in. So if it's all snow from high elevation, the low elevation creeks aren't running as much. So is it, I call it dry 650 or wet 650? It's just a lot of factors. I can get I think 650 for me is like approaching a cutoff for getting a 16-foot gearboat down the Illinois. We could run it lower than 650. It just, you just don't want it dropping so that day you run Greenwall, it's actually like 550. Unless you have smaller boats, you know, like I could probably get a 13-foot boat down, you know, at 400 CFS if I wanted to, but the 16 would be, you could get a 16 down. It would just be fully epic. So to get it down below like 550, 500, you'd just be stuck a lot and it'd be kind of a mess. I do like the larger 16s for low water because it sits higher. And so, you know, the same amount of gear, if it's in a 14, is going to make the boat sit lower. So, you know, the only problem is you can't always fit the 16th to the same chutes. On the Illinois, that's only a problem at submarine hole. So you just deal with the 16 at submarine hole. And if you have, if you're a good boater, you can get the 16 through a lot of stuff and you're getting stuck less because you're sitting higher in the water. It's the same thing with running a sweep boat on the middle fork at like 1.5 feet. You know, people are getting stuck in their 12s because they're lowered down deep in the water. And then you run a lightweight sweep boat through and you pass them because you're sitting high in the water. So it's just, the answer is it really depends. It depends on the guides. Are the guides happy, healthy, in shape? Is it the first trip of the year? It depends on the guest. Are the guests fit? Are they in for that kind of low water? Is more of an adventure, it's a little bit more dangerous. Are they fit? Are they ready for it? Again, is it rising or falling? Is it wet or dry? It's not just a simple number. And everybody wants me to tell them a number, and it's not a simple number. I'll tell you what I'm looking at right now because I'm thinking about our May trips. And it could rain and May could be amazing. The first thing I'm looking at is Grants Pass weather. And I'm sure you could look at other places. It probably matters. Probably the, honestly, Cave Junction matters more. There's Cave Junction in there. But it's a generalization. I mean, whether it's Grants Pass or Cave Junction, it's all about the same. There's rain in the forecast. And it will come up a lot if it rains. There's actually a significant amount of rain in the forecast. There's 0.4 inch and 0.13 inch. I checked earlier today. It was 0.6 on Sunday and 0.3 on Monday. But these spring rainstorms tend to not actually come through as predicted. So if I knew this rain was coming, I would probably run our Sunday strip. I knew it was coming, but it has to come. And so I don't have confidence this rain will actually come. So I had to cancel the Sunday strip. I'm looking out to our April 10th trip. And when I get the 10-day forecast, I can make a decision about May 10th. You know, it could rain, you know, May 9th and 10th, and we could have the most glorious Illinois trip of all time. And so I'm still holding on. Again, there's not snowpack. I'm not going to run at 300, but rain can change the Illinois very fast. And we can go from, we're just canceling it because it looks low, to it rains and you have the most glorious, beautiful May Illinois trip of your life. It's worth hanging on for to see what happens. You know, if it doesn't happen, I don't know, go to the Rogue. The Rogue is great. The Rogue's right there. But I think the Illinois will run again in May, at least for a few days. Hopefully it's when we have a trip booked. And so I hang on as long as I can. If the writing's on the wall, I'm going to cancel it. But it's, man, if you catch one of those trips where it does happen to rain, life is really good. And you want that. So the other place I'm looking, so you see there's rain in the forecast, right? Illinois River flow prediction. I have on Whitewater Guidebook a page about this. If you just also on Whitewater Guidebook, I can show you too. If you just go to the Illinois page, Illinois, and click flow, it takes you to this page. And some of these predictions are gone, like Trump killed them. Or somebody killed them. Somebody in the government killed some of these prediction charts. So some of these charts I need to update or get rid of the links to. But this is the prediction. You see there's rain in the forecast, but there's a tiny bump there. That tiny bump does not correlate with what it should bump if that rain comes through. So these forecasts are wrong all the time. Like they're really bad forecasts, but they give you a generalization. And you know, somebody emailed me today who said, "Oh, I see the flow is going to be 300 on May 10th." I'm like, that just because this graph says that doesn't mean that's going to happen or even close to happen. So as soon as rain pops up in the forecast, this will all change a lot. And these you'll see these change day to day based on forecasts and whatever happens. So, and I watch this graph really carefully for all of our trips. And I can just tell you this prediction it's a guideline, but it's terrible. So don't judge it based on this completely. But I could tell you, even if that rain comes through that's predicted, it'll come back up to like 600,000-700,000 potentially. It can come up really fast. 0.4 inches of rain is a lot of rain, but it'll also drop down pretty fast too. And you can see like this is the lowest flow for that. It's record low flow. So we're approaching that. And it's so low, like the average isn't even, the average shows on this graph normally, the average is higher than 1,000. So it should be based on an average year higher, but unfortunately the snowpack is terrible and it hasn't rained that much. So hopefully that helps. I would say I would take a holistic view of everything when I look at whether or not to cancel a trip. And on this is the page, my description, I say the recommended flows are 700 to 2400. My commercial cutoff is 650. But we've run a trip commercially at 400. Just again, based on like the guides, I had, you know, I put extra guides on it. They're very motivated, a young, healthy crew. I knew they would go minimal, and people understood what they're getting into when they were into it. So you could go lower than 700. I just think I wouldn't recommend for most people to go below 700, especially if it's your first time. I don't know if it's your first time or not, but especially if it's your first time. So anyway, here we go. Anything I need to know for rowing school in a couple weeks that the average person wouldn't think of? I have no idea. I mean, we have very complete information. So like we do our best. If you go to our rowing school page and you go to the course details, it's all there. Like everything you would need to know. We probably emailed this to you. It's on our website. Hopefully we've emailed this to you a few times. This is really complete. And we also have a blog post somewhere. Let me see if I can find it. That says like what to expect. Here we go. What to expect in your first class or in school. This is like, this should have your answers. Like this is, and we probably have emailed this to you or will email. I don't know. But this is it. We do our very best to prep you with information about what to expect. Yeah, it's just have fun. Like people love those courses. It's people absolutely love them. So enjoy it. It's going to be sweet. Okay, so let's talk about ropes a little bit. I'm going to make myself bigger for a second. I'm working on this, the online rescue course, and I'm working on a lesson on throw bags right now, and it's just so complicated. And just so all of you know, like sometimes I'll do a Gear Garage show to be like a dry run for the online rowing school. So you'll probably see a throw bag Gear Garage show come up soon. And for me, that's like the first draft, the first run, the practice run, before I make the set of videos for the online course. So you'll probably see something similar, even if you don't have the online course. And today I went out and I broke a bunch of ropes. I'll share some video. This is what it looks like. Oops, let's get rid of that, remove. This is what it looks like me, breaking ropes. And what happens is I break a couple ropes and that makes me be curious. What about this rope? What about that rope? That rope broke in a weird way. Let me break the rope just like that again. I kept running back and forth between my excavator setup to break ropes and the house. They just keep getting ropes. And so you can see there's just like tons of ropes. They usually break at the knot. I don't have any fancy stuff, so I have to tie a figure eight in both ends. And they usually break at the knot because a figure eight is less efficient than the rope. And I even broke some webbing today doing this. Webbing's usually pretty strong. I broke some webbing. These flip lines that I sell, that I, again, sell promotion, I have never broken one. And when I broke the webbing, I threw the flip line in. You can see the flip line around the tree, and you can see the flip line around the excavator. And I had webbing around the excavator, and once the webbing broke, that was the end. And you can see all of them pulling and seeing one thing break. It's actually super fun. So there's all kinds of ropes. Here, there's this rope that... This is an interesting one. This one I pulled out of a Kokatat throw bag that claims it breaks at 2,500 pounds. It broke around 800. And I think I know the rope they're claiming to have in that throw bag. And I pulled some out. I have some here somewhere. I have a spool of it. This isn't the same rope. I'm a little suspect on those Kokatat throw bag claims. I think they're putting in the wrong rope, honestly. This is sample... This is a really nice Spectra rope. This is one of my favorite ropes, actually. This is a Sterling Ultraline in the 3/8 inch. And it's pretty stiff right now. You can see how it sticks up. Right? Once you stretch it, especially these Spectra lines, they stick up like this. What's interesting is they didn't break at the knot. The Sterling website says they should break around 15 kilonewtons. They broke at 14. But it was usually, what happened was the polypropylene sheet would just slide off. I think this actually, wow, that's kind of cool. That's actually melted. The Spectra melted. So I broke this a few times because it was super interesting to me. And And you can see, instead of breaking at the knot, the sheath just, you know, the cord is still the same, which is really cool, actually. And you can see down in this end, on this end of the knot, no, it looks like it did break in the knot. It looks like it pulled through the sheath, or it did, it just pulled through the sheath. So, it's interesting, PolyPro sheath across the Spectra core is not perfect. Like, it's more of a sheath problem than it is actually the rope breaking. The Spectra, this stuff is so strong, it's crazy. And then just testing some other random ropes. This is the WWTC throwback. I did a few tests of this today. And it's really fun to break ropes and hook it up. And I am just super curious. So you'll probably all see a video from me soon about this. I'll say that generalizations I found were damn, and you could just learn this by like looking at all the data. But now that I've actually played with it, diameter makes a huge role. Like, small thin rope just isn't that strong. It just isn't that strong. Thick rope is stronger. Diameter plays a huge factor here. Another thing is Spectra is quite a bit stronger. Just if you want strong ropes, it is significantly stronger by like quite a bit. And you already probably all know this, but it's also way more expensive. So, you know, it's a trade-off. Do you want an expensive rope that's stronger? And also the thin Spectra rope, I'm going to go test one more here in a minute. The thin Spectra rope, the one that comes in the Kokatat throwback, they say is 2,500 pounds, wasn't. It was remarkably not strong. And I think for mechanical advantage, like I guess the distinction line is, if you're going to consider doing mechanical advantage with a throw bag, you really want to have at least 8 millimeters or 5/16 at a minimum, and have Spectra, some sort of Spectra product, some sort of like whatever those things are, right? And so and I'll play this again. But anything smaller than 5/16 probably isn't adequate. And I'd recommend 3/8, honestly. But as soon as you go to 3/8, the rope is so heavy, it's hard to be a throw band. And so it's almost like, and when, if you're throwing a rope, you want something that is grabbable. You don't want it too thin. So you want, like, I just think that 5/16 or 8 millimeters is such an awesome diameter for a throw bag because it's grabbable, pullable, but also the size and weight that you can have a throw bag that's light-ish, right? As soon as you go bigger than 8 millimeter or 5/16 are about the same. It's just a heavier, it's all heavier. It's harder to be accurate at some sort of distance. So I'm starting to feel with throw bags, like we should just be focusing on the best bag we can throw and not worry so much about doing mechanical advantage with our throw bags, and have a separate rope. This is how I've always felt, honestly. I'm just like really, I went through a phase of like, yeah, you could probably do mechanical advantage with Spectra in a throw bag. But after doing these tests, there's not many ropes that strong. And so like, let's talk about killing dudes for a second. One person pulling a piece of rope who's very strong, who has a good grip and can take their feet in, can pull a killing dude, one killing dude. So I'm going to say three people can probably pull 2 kilonewtons, because as you get more people, it's less efficient, right? 2 kilonewtons, that's three people. A 3-to-1 mechanical advantage system with, if you have really good gear, is like actually 2.3-to-1. But most of you have like, most people I see in classes have chintzy pulleys. It's more like 1.7-to-1, honestly. But let's just say for the sake of argument, it's 2.5-to-1. So let's say you're basically in a 3-to-1 system of three people pulling 5 kilonewtons. That's right at the breaking strength of throw bags without Spectra. So I think that's an important detail. Like, you could do it, but the throw bag could break, right? If it's Spectra, then three people pulling is within good working limits, right? Like, it's a thing you could or should do. But as soon as you start to go to 4, 5, 6 people, you might be pushing those limits. So I would limit it to 3, maybe 4 people pulling if you have a Spectra throw bag. But if it's 8 millimeter, it's just the bare minimum. You really, like I said, you need the 9.5 mil or the 3/8. saying a lot of fast words and like throwing a lot of terms around. So I'm just gonna summarize this again, simply. I would suggest we have throw bags that are accurate and light, things we like throwing, and not worry about rope strength. Good salt of the earth throw bags. And then for pulling on mechanical advantage, have a separate rope. Ideally, some nice static line that you can pull it with. And ideally, like a lot of length, like 50, 60, 75, 80 feet is bare minimum to set up a 3-to-1 on shore. You need 100, 150, 200 feet of rope. Let's just say, like, for most of you, if you're like private boater, like 120, 150 of a good, like, 10 mil rope, right? 3/8, maybe 7/16. And then if you're like running gear boats on Western rivers, big wide rivers, like the Middle Fork, the Rogue, the Selway, you probably want 200 feet of a separate line and not depend on your throwbacks for mechanical advantage. Hopefully at all, I'm like thinking about this stuff right now. I'm playing with the outside. It's in my brain. I'm just like regurgitating things I'm thinking about as I prepare to do some actual videos on your garage about this. So, love to hear your thoughts. Shagster said, I bought the WWTC Classic 18 mil throwback through your website. Did you test the rope and spike? I did. I just did two tests, and both times they broke at 7 kilonewtons. That's at the knot. So it's probably like in a 9 to 10 kilonewton range, the actual strength of the rope without a knot, but with a knot, it's 7 kilonewtons. And so I think it's straddling both like the one that can't do mechanical advantage and the one that can. It's like kind of in between. That's a custom rope made in Europe. And so I know a lot of people who have the mechanical advantage with that rope. I know it's a decent rope for it, but the Spectra that was breaking it, like depending on the Spectra, like the bigger diameter one, the 3/8 was breaking at 14 kilonewtons. So twice the strength. But it's bigger diameter. My guess from here, let's open this up. Let's look at Sterling's website. Sterling, I think the best rope is the Ultraline. If you're going to go with a fancy rope, let's see. Let's get out of this. Remove. Let's get to this. So the thing, the Ultraline is a sweet rope. The problem with the Ultraline is they only make it in 6.5 millimeter, which is that a 1/4 inch, I think? And 9.5 millimeter, which is 3/8. They don't make a 5/16, which is the ideal size. So you're either going to go like thin and hard to pull on. This is the rope, by the way, that Kokatak claims is in their throw bag, which I don't think it's in their throw bag after my tests. This is the rope I've been testing, this 9.5 millimeter, 3/8, that says it breaks at 23 kilonewtons. I broke it at 14 just now. So it broke it the knot, but one time it didn't. And I'm not doing science. I'm just out there pulling on the excavator and like a thing I bought on the internet to measure forces. So I'm not doing actual science. I found this one to break. It says 11 kilonewtons. The one that's in the Kokatak bag was breaking at 3.5. I'm going to go test this. I have some of this rope. I'm going to go test it right now and find out. I don't think that this is the 9.5 millimeters, 3/8. And I tested some of that. It definitely didn't break at 23.3, which is interesting. It says that there because I just had the flyer. Hold on. I thought it said something different here. This is the thing that comes with the rope. It says 23.3. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, and then their water line, this 3/8, their 5/16 water line, which is not Spectra, breaks at 7, it says, which I tested some of that too, and that's definitely accurate. So yeah, I'm not doing science here. I'm just breaking a bunch of stuff with my excavator and videoing it just so I can learn some stuff personally. And I would say again, like there's a lot of different types of rope and you have to know what you're using it for. But I think I'm not stoked on using a throw bag. After doing this, I'm not super stoked on using throw bags for mechanical advantage unless it's something like a light paddle boat. And I would, again, go for a rope that you like, that's easy to throw. And if you want to spend some more money and get some Spectra, that's great. The problem is this Sterling, I think the 5/16 or 8mm is like the perfect size for throwing because it's lightish, it's easy to throw, and it's easy to grab. The 3/8 is a great rope. It just makes the whole thing heavier and harder to throw. I wish they made this in a 5/16. I think they'd probably sell, I'd buy a lot more for sure. So hopefully answered your question. And did you manage to snap the 14mm ultra high? Yeah, so it's 13mm, I thought. I didn't know. We snapped webbing and I replaced it. I still have not broken one of those uplines. I've only broken them in the fact that, like, here's one right here. I use these all the time. If you use them all the time and you're always fiddling with them and wrapping around trees and doing things, they'll start to fray a little bit. Like, and if you have one of these and it frays on you, just send it to me. I'll mail you a new one. Like, I won't even, no questions asked. They will, if you use them a lot, I use them a lot, like almost daily. Over time, they'll just like fray a little bit. They're still strong. I've had one like fray a ton. We tried to break it, we couldn't. I still haven't broken one of these. This is stronger for sure than the tool I used to test. Like those things, my little measuring tool thing, these things, the line scale, I think these things actually break around 28 kilonewtons. Like, it will break this thing. And this is $1,000 for these things, right? This is stronger than this, I'm pretty sure. Like, I could go to 28 kilonewtons and find out, but I don't, I've pulled on these harder than 28. And again, these things, even when they're frayed, I've had some frayed ones. We pulled on them really hard and we haven't broken one. And I did just break this webbing. You can see this webbing here broke. This is classic webbing, right? That's supposed to break about, it says on the website, 17 kilonewtons. This one broke at 10 actually. But I just took this off and put this on and started pulling heavier stuff. I still haven't broken this. So this is certainly super strong. We need a gear garage and how not to rope crossover episode. You know, it's funny you say that. I love how not to, and I reached out to them saying, hey, it'd be cool to, can I send you some things to test? I didn't even ask them to do a crossover episode. They're way bigger than I am as a channel. And because I wanted to test these, I said, can I send you a few things to test? I'm a river guide. I have an internet show. And they were super gracious. They came back to me and they said, hey, sorry, we're too busy. We can't. Which I'm like, cool. I totally get it. They said, we'll just sell you, just buy some line scales. And so I ended up buying line scales. I bought two of them to do my own tests. And luckily I have the excavator. I was pulling with my ATV and my truck, which those are not the best thing to pull with. I'd love to have their little fancy setup, but the excavator is pretty straightforward too. Trevor at Rafting Magazine did do a crossover episode with How Not To. And so that has happened, but I mean, they're a massive channel. Like, I don't, you know, I'm small potatoes compared to them. The only thing I'd like to see them break is this. Cause they have the stuff to measure how strong this is. My stuff is very like rafting specific. Their stuff is more climbing specific. So it is a little different. So I think that's it for you all today. Thanks you all for watching, and look out for some videos coming out soon. I'll probably try to get that throwback one done and uploaded maybe early next week. And thanks for watching. If you have a second, you have not subscribed, please do. I love subscribers. It makes me feel very cool. Hit that like button. It just signals that the show is halfway decent. And I will see you all next week.